The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, the Dominion Fox trial kicked off with a stern warning from the judge. Cameras were not allowed in this courtroom. However, before the case even began, shortly before 4 p.m. on Tuesday, the judge called the jury back into the courtroom and announced, quote, the case has been resolved. The Associated Press is reporting that Fox has settled the case for a sum of $787.5 million.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was a it was over and done pretty quick, wasn't it? I was wondering how that was all going to shake out. What kind of evidence would be put forward? A lot of people think that there were some shenanigans regarding the election and the way that things ultimately turned out. And I know a lot of other outlets that are not fans of, let's say, Fox News, were probably delighting. They're thinking, wow, this is, you know, this is raw meat, and this is going to be great. It's going to be fodder. It was over in a heartbeat, really. It just ended. Fox News, I don't know if you followed the story at all. Dominion Voting Systems, they were supposed to have this drawn-out battle. They reached a legal settlement yesterday over Dominion's claims that Fox had defamed them in the aftermath of the 2020 elections. And Fox had reported that Dominion's voting machines had switched votes from former President Donald Trump over to Joe Biden in several jurisdictions. And Dominion CEO said Fox admitted to telling lies about their company, and a jury had been selected. They'd been seated. Case was about ready to be heard. The judge called for a recess as the party's lawyers were penning out a settlement. You know, they were hammering a deal out, and Dominion was asking for $1.6 billion from Fox. They reached an agreement of a little less than half that amount. They settled for about $787 million, and Dominion says that they're now going to go after others, including OWN and Newsmax. So they're going to target a lot of those different groups. You know, a lot of people were confused over the elections and how things ultimately settled out. And it really is telling. I mean, I don't know if anyone will ever really know. Did Joe Biden win the election outright? A lot of experts say absolutely he did. And he won decisively. I was talking to Maggie about this, and this is just an observation on my part. And again, I'm not weighing in on whether, you know, there was any fraud here or not. I'll just give you the optics of what we saw. I remember during the and I don't know what you remember or how you've seen it. I remember during the election cycle, I mean, Joe Biden, I think, was very concerned, and rightly so, due to his age, to COVID. So they set up a camera in his basement, and he did most of his media appearances there, never really left it. When he did do appearances, people came out in their cars. They sat in their cars. Remember that? And like a whopping 200 cars would show up for one of his appearances. Meanwhile, just on the other side of the aisle, and again, I'm just looking at the optics. This is not a partisan thing. I looked at the Trump campaign where you had flotillas. You had parades of vehicles coming out. And you had people standing in line overnight. You had thousands and thousands of people filling stadiums to talk to hear this guy deliver a speech. And then take the conventions. You know, you've got the Republican convention, which was actually about making America great. It was very hopeful. It was very forward-leaning and futuristic. And you had the Democratic convention, was rather dark on how Donald Trump is destroying the country and ultimately how we're in a dark winter, you know, and that this is a battle for the soul of America. And it was all very negative, right? And just as an observer, I just thought, you know, hope wins, right? A message of positivity, of a brighter future, of things changing. That's what Barack Obama ran on, right? He ran on hope and change. I thought his campaign was absolutely brilliant. I thought Obama hit a home run with his campaign there. And I thought, oh, Biden's in trouble. You know, no one's showing up. I mean, just look at the numbers. Look who's there. So then the election gets underway. And when all the numbers are tallied, Joe Biden had, 84 million votes, 80 million plus. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. There was a ton, right? He had more votes than Barack Obama ever did. And people wanted to go out and vote for Obama because they wanted to be part of history. They wanted to be, you know, say, hey, I voted for the first black president in our nation's history. Plus, Obama was an orator. That man He could speak. I'm an observer of all things, and I was so inspired by his "Yes, We Can" speech in New Hampshire and so many other places when he was running. I thought Obama was a genius when it came to the way he used teleprompters for the first time. Everybody else is looking off their notes, their scripts. They're trying to get through their speech, and Obama's looking. People are thinking, "Wow, this guy can speak." Well, he's using presidential prompters. It was brilliant. It was a great run for him. So you've got that. You've got more people voting for Joe Biden and that negative message than you did for Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. You can understand why some people were saying, hey, what's going on? Polls were announced early. But again, there has been no evidence that has come forward that said there was any algorithm that was written. I mean, there's controversy about missing ballots or mail-in ballots or curtains being closed and not allowing people to see the vote. And there's a lot of things people make a case for. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to be on the side of this was a legitimate election, and I just my vision was a little bit wrong. People wanted Joe Biden, and I was wrong, you know, during the midterms. I thought the economy was the death knell for any candidate, right? I mean, my gosh, look at inflation. Look how high it is. Look at gas prices and everything else. Look at Afghanistan. Look at all these other things. I thought, oh, my gosh, people want to change. So it's, you know, people are not that myopic, not that blind that, you know, it's all about abortion. It can't be about abortion. I was wrong. It was an eye-opener for me. I really learned a lot from the last two elections. You know, my eyes deceived me. Apparently, the American heart, a lot of Americans would rather make sure that a culture of death prevails in this country than making sure that, you know, those who are struggling financially can put food on the table. The fact that these gender and sexuality issues are paramount importance, it must outweigh. I mean, because Debs ran on those platforms. You know, democracy's in jeopardy and you know, you're going to lose your right to kill your child. That was a big thing. And people apparently voted for it. So, I mean, I just look back. So this next election, which is going to be upon us, it's going to be a hard call for me. I really want to be objective. I want to see how it happens. Clearly, Fox News, you know, they cost them $787 million for the things that they were saying. Maybe it's a wake-up call for them as well in terms of how they approach how they handle some of this. So we'll see. And don't get mad at me for talking like this. I know some people right now say, how can you say that, Drew? Fox did this, or Trump is this, or, you know, or, oh my gosh, you're so anti-Biden. It's like, no, I'm just being honest with you. I'm not just expressing how I saw it. I mean, if you were sitting, you know, if we were having dinner together, I would share the same perspective. I really would. I just, I'm missing something, I think. I'm just trying to understand. I really am. I'm trying to understand. I consider myself a pretty good judge of people, of the big picture, of seeing what's coming and what's around the bend. I warned about what was going to happen after the Obergefell decision with the redefinition of marriage. I've been pretty accurate in some of my calls, but yeah, I'm not ashamed to say I'm wrong, and I am. I miss these things. So we'll see what happens. I just maybe it's my heart. I just don't understand a culture of death. I don't understand the things that are driving Americans today, because in the end, it's just not good for the future of our country. So we'll see. Anyway, that's just a quick update on one of the big stories of the day that was supposed to be drug out and ended pretty quickly. The Senate Armed Service Subcommittee is holding a hearing today. You know what they're hearing? I kind of like this. They're having a hearing today on UFOs. The only witness will be the head of a newly established Defense Department office called All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. I've never heard of it before. Today was the first day I heard of it. It's known as ARRO, A-A-R-O. It's an acronym for All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, ARRO, A-A-R-O. And according to the Hills, where I saw this report, Congress granted the office sweeping authority to scientifically analyze UFOs, unidentified flying objects that exceed the known state of art in science and technology. So to cut through several levels of bureaucracy, lawmakers mandated that ARRO, that the director report to top Pentagon and intelligence community leadership. You'll hear the results of the hearing tomorrow. Where are you on UFOs? Are they a demonic deception? I know a lot of people believe that. Are they Do you think you think there's a force out there? You think there are other intelligent life that somehow discovered a way to travel across vast distances and have visited the planet Earth? Are there probes out there, you know, examining what we're doing? There's reports of nuclear sites being turned on and off by unidentified objects in the past. Now they're called unidentified area phenomena, UAPs. I don't know. I grapple with this. You know, I was like a pendulum. One day I'm like, oh, yeah, why not? Another day, absolutely not. We're the only one in the universe. God created us, and this is our play. Who knows? We'll see what comes out from some of this. I've heard some people who have been on those committees, and they say that like 99% of the stuff they can explain away, 97, 98, 99%. But there are a few things that there are no explanations for. None whatsoever. So maybe we'll dive into that again in the future, too. I find it a fascinating subject because with technology, artificial intelligence moving along, what we're going to see in the future is going to be mind-numbing. It's going to be amazing what you are going to see in the next 20 years. I'll call you to prayers. I always do in this opening segment because I saw that Taiwan is purchasing 400 anti-ship missiles from Boeing as a defense against possible invasion from China. And a U.S. military spokesman said that the U.S. is working with contractors to be sure that Taiwan has defense equipment in a timely manner. China right now views Taiwan, and we've talked about this. This is going to be a huge story in our future. They see Taiwan as its own territory. And the U.S. officially has adopted a one-China policy. However, the U.S. is also committed to keeping Taiwan outfitted with armament, and two speakers of the House, one Democrat, one Republican, have met with the Taiwanese president against China's wishes. And then what did you see after that? China saber rattling. They've done, you know, they flew over, invaded airspace, and did all sorts of military drills there. Bloomberg was reporting that the deal also included fighter jets and torpedoes and artillery and other missiles. Some say that we should have armed Ukraine much earlier. If they did, it could have shifted things. Some say there's a reason we didn't. But what they want to do with Taiwan is make it a prickly little porcupine so that China will think twice maybe about invading it and coming in. But these microchips that are manufactured over there, these processors, I'm telling you what, that's what this is all about. And I really hope we here in the U.S. can get up to speed pretty quick and start manufacturing them ourselves. Something happens to Taiwan, I think a lot of countries are really going to suffer. They'll be brought to their knees in a lot of different ways. The U.S., the U.K., Canada, Japan, France, they've all announced a nuclear power alliance. Did you hear about this? I was going to talk about this in greater detail. This is aimed at displacing Putin from the international market. And those are five nuclear, you know, power-producing nations of the G7 Economic Forum, and they decided to leverage their resources to undermine Russia's grip right now on supply chains and really on the international energy market. Russia, man, what a vast nation, and what a – it's very rich in a lot of different resources. Here's what the U.K. government said. I'll just share this one sentence. It says, this agreement will be used – as a basis for pushing Putin out of the nuclear fuel market entirely and doing so as quickly as possible to cut off another means for him to fund his barbaric attack on the Ukraine and fundamentally leave Russia out in the cold. That's from number 10 Downing Street, of course. U.S., the U.K., Canada, Japan, and France, right? And France. And we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I wonder how Putin will react to that. It always gives us pause, but we'll see what happens. I want to talk to you also about what's happening on the international scene. And I'm going to share with you several stories that have come across my radar, and I think this is important. I grapple whether or not to address some of these things. I'm kind of tired of talking about them, to be honest with you, but if you thought we were scraping the bottom when it comes to sexual depravity, you're going to rethink that by the time I'm done sharing some of the stories that just came across my radar. My apologies early on. The United Nations International Law Panel, they recently issued a report. Gosh, I hate to even talk about this, but I'm going to say it. They stated that minors have the ability to give consent to sexual acts with adults. And forgive me, this is just one of a number of stories I'm sharing with you. This is such, at the very heart of this, demonic. This is, without question, an attack on family and on children. Here's what they say, okay? The United Nations International Law Panel. They said sexual conduct involving persons below the domestically prescribed minimum age of consent. You know, you love words. Domestically prescribed minimum age of consent to sex may be consensual, in fact, if not in law. That's what they're saying. It says the enforcement of criminal law should reflect the rights and capacities of persons under 18 of age to make decisions without engaging in consensual sexual conduct and their right to be heard in matters concerning them, end of quote. That's twisted. I'm sorry. That's just wrong. You're going to see the door now cracked open for a lot of abuse. The Daily Wire was reporting that the U.S. Agency for International Development, that's USAID, they're partnering with Bill and Melinda Gates, and they're promoting something called digital gender equality. This might be the first time you're hearing about it, but let me throw it on your radar. I'll put it in this grab bag of garbage that we're talking about here. I mean, unfortunately, this is what's happening in the culture. So what are they doing? It was actually clever. So you got the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're promoting digital gender equality in Africa and around the world, right? Why Africa, right? Why these impoverished areas? They're going to be, guess what they're doing? Sounds great, right? Oh, they're going to provide phones to women. That's good, Drew. What's wrong with that? This comes right after the USAID started another initiative on improved access, quality, and I'll quote here, to use healthcare for all individuals across the life course, including gender diverse and LGBTQI plus individuals with particular focus on sexual and reproductive health care rights, end of quote. So what's happening here? Let's funnel our money here. Let's give them these phones. Let's give a direct line right into their minds, right? And let's push this LGBTQ, gender diverse, sexual, you know, reproductive health care rights, a.k.a. abortion and contraception, right? Let's push this garbage on these innocent people. Let's infect them with this virus. Let's poison them with this evil. That's exactly what's happening. It's all, they whitewash the outside of it to make it look good. Oh, we're helping them. They need this. It's destructive, and it's part of this big picture of what's happening. Satan's aggressive today. What are the world's most recognized billionaires? Second richest man in the world right now, Elon Musk. He's questioning, you know, that whole ideology. And I was having a conversation with my producer, Maggie, right before coming on here. He did this interview with Carlson. He said that birth control and abortion, he cited them as reasons why the world's population numbers are slowing down. And he's wondering if it could mean disaster for humanity. Musk, he questions whether we have a soul. He questions God. Okay. Fundamentally, this guy's a genius. I mean, what he sees happening globally is amazing. What he's been able to accomplish is amazing. You know what? He's right on the population issue. He's right on the life issue. Another man that's right on that is Austin Roos, president of the Center for Family and Human Rights. He joins me right now. I hope you check out this group. They're on the right side of the line. Check out c-fam.org. C-fam.org. Hey, Austin, thanks for making time for me. Good afternoon.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Boy, so much to talk about. I just threw out some really horrible stories. I hate it.
Welcome to our crazy world.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, it's insane when I see what's happening here. Let's talk about the lawyers at the UN. What are they thinking giving minors consent? I'll start there. I mean, that to me is just shocking. I don't understand the logic or the rationale. How's that a good?
Well, let me make a distinction here. The report from the International Commission of Jurists is not a part of the UN. It is an NGO that is highly influential at the United Nations, and they're fully connected to many parts of the United Nations,
gotcha.
But it's not the United Nations. But having said that, they're really influential. And this is where a lot of really bad stuff starts, is with the International Commission on Jurists. So it's not without great danger. And what the sexual left is all about at the international level is breaking down all barriers. And, you know, it is about imposing the sexual revolution on the entire world. And the way that they do this is through UN reports and UN documents and UN resolutions and treaties and things like that. Right now, they have reopened the definition of gender. Not a lot of people know.
Yeah.
We have actually a very good definition of gender in international law. It was in the document that created the International Criminal Court. Gender is understood as men and women in the context of society. They have wanted to change that since the beginning. To them, of course, gender is a social construct and can be remade any way that they want to. So they want to break down all these barriers. They want to take away parents' rights. They want to, you know, they want to do to Africa and Asia what they have done to grade school students here in the United States.
Do you think they'll be successful?
Well, let me give you some good news. And the answer is maybe. With regard to the documents, we just won a big victory on Friday. They were pushing really hard in something called the Commission on Population and Development to incorporate this term, this nasty term called comprehensive sexuality education. And the negotiations ended on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and the chairman had to withdraw the document altogether, which is unheard of, because the Africans stood up to the European Union and the Biden administration and said, no, we're not going to accept comprehensive sexuality education. So there is good news. Now, they have all the money, so they can impose, you know, like Bill and Melinda Gates. They can use billions of dollars from Bill and Melinda Gates to force countries to accept these things through their health ministries with, you know, a financial gun to their head. But with regard to international law, we're in pretty good shape.
Well, that's good news. Congratulations, by the way. You know, Maggie and I were talking, my producer here, about how these are the same people who decry colonialism on Native peoples, and yet they actively promote altering the natural order of these developing countries. These developing countries don't want this. I mean, it's contrary to common sense and the natural law, and yet they're going to be indoctrinated, and they're going to be. You know, they're going to be force fed this stuff. I mean, even this phone idea. Talk about, share a little bit about Bill and Melinda Gates. What's USAID doing with the Gates Foundation? I mean, giving everybody phones, great, but what are they really doing? What's behind all this?
Well, it's exactly the same thing. I mean, they're all doing exactly the same thing, and they're trying to, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been involved in the United Nations for many, many years in funding, you know, huge programs for UN-style contraception in Africa. You know, they think there's too many Africans. And so all of this feeds into the same thing, which is, as I said before, imposing the sexual revolution on the whole world. You know, even Pope Francis refers to this as sexual colonialism. And that's precisely what's going on. And you know, Bill Gates is one of the most dangerous men in the entire world. You know, the last time they pumped, well, they do it on a regular basis. But years ago when they started doing this, they said, oh, this has nothing to do with abortion. You know, all this is helping people space their children. And we knew then that it was a big fat lie. And so all they're doing now with regard to digital gender equality is exactly the same thing that they've always done. You know, digital is a big buzzword now at the United Nations. It's a part of all negotiations. So it's the same old, same old. Yeah. Anytime you see them say gender, it means the sexual revolution.
So what do you make of Elon Musk? You know, he did an interview with Carlson the other day, and, you know, abortion, birth control, they're cutting fertility rates, and he was excoriated for that. He's really concerned about falling population numbers. Your thought on Musk's view, and how legitimate is it?
You know, it's funny because, you know, in his personal life, he's absolutely wackadoon.
Yes.
You know, he's had, what, like 10 kids by 5 different wives given them all these crazy names. But there's a lot of stuff that he absolutely gets. And I'm a little shocked that he gets this so well. I mean, you know, 25 years ago, there was an expert group meeting at the United Nations where they discussed how low can fertility go. 25 years ago, their answer was, we don't know. Wow. So, I mean, one of the big dangers in the world is the aging population. Mm-hmm. I wrote a couple of weeks ago at Catholic World Report, I wrote something about the ghost houses. There's something like a million ghost houses in Japan where nobody lives. The people have died. died. You know, they've had to come and carry out the bodies, and nobody wants the houses because they don't have enough people. So, I mean, this is the future of large parts of the world if people don't wise up and start having babies.
Well, that's haunting. I'll have to link over. I haven't read the article. I'd love to see that. Ghost houses. I'll do a quick search for that as well.
Yeah.
Your organization is fighting, I know, very hard at the UN against all of this ideology. What can ordinary Americans do? How can we get behind you? How can people learn much more about this if they want to get plugged into you?
Well, our website is c-fam.org. We put out a weekly report called The Friday Facts. You know, we've been writing 2 550-word news stories every week for 25 years on what's going on at the UN, generally originally reported. And we're deeply involved in negotiations. And if people want to throw us a few shekels, that is always welcome, too.
Well, hey, thank you for what you've done. I know we've talked for a long time on the air here, and it seems these policies are becoming more aggressive and more prolific, and I'm glad you're there to shine the light on them. Thank you, Austin, for being here. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
You got it. That's Austin Roos, president of the Center for Family and Human Rights. Their website, c-fam.org. Stay with me when we come back. Chaplet's about 30 minutes away, but I do want to talk about another thing. China is out to try to usurp the U.S. dollar. And do you know what BRICS are? B-R-I-C-S? Let me tell you what that acronym stands for when I return. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society. Not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio, 24/7 on the Relevant Radio archives. Just click on Drew Mariani Show page.
Yeah, if you hear something that you find interesting, maybe you get into it a little bit late, and you say, gosh, I wish I heard that interview, go to relevantradio.com. Go to the Drew Mariani Show page that you just heard Mr. Announcer voice say. And you can download the podcast, right? You can do that. It's also available on Apple and everywhere your podcasts are found. Maggie tends to get this broadcast, the day of broadcast, up right after we sign off. It takes her a little bit of time to get all that stuff, you know, edited, packaged, and online. But she gets it done pretty quick. But if you missed anything yesterday, the day before, it's actually kind of cool. Check out some of the conversations we've had. Fascinating stuff. Really, really good stuff. I think you'll be glad you found it, and tell others about it as well. I want to talk digital currency. I want to talk a little bit about China's currency possibly usurping the dollar. If that happens, bad news. The world economy will certainly be at communist, you know, whims if that ever became the global, you know, reserve currency. You know, we've all heard about Bitcoin, the original digital currency, and, you know, it was made up out of something called blockchain technology, and it has ebbed and flowed, risen and fallen. And it's kind of hard to comprehend, to be honest with you. If you're having difficulty, you're not alone. The idea was to get some kind of new monetary exchange system that bypasses central banks. A lot of competition has sprung up to challenge it, but a new competitor could come on the world and crush Bitcoin and all of its competitors pretty completely. I don't know if you've been, I've been tracking this, and in just a moment, Deacon Frank Riley is going to join me. He'll be able to unpack it and explain it to us. The Federal Reserve is now considering its own version of cryptocurrency. And the idea is that the way banking is run now is based on the old days when transactions were carried out by paper. Today, for instance, only about 42% of millennials even use checks. I bet if you ask some of them, they probably don't even know how to write one. Cash is still used, but I'll be honest with you, I never have cash on me. Somebody could put a gun to my head, I have no cash. You know, everything's digital. You know, you can use a cash app, you can use, you know, credit cards, you can use your debit or ATM card. Most transactions on the retail level are handled electronically. And a lot of apps like Venmo, they're used for paying friends and family. But with all of those electronic transactions, doesn't make a lot of sense to be handling them as if, you know, they were done on paper. So that's part of what the Fed is looking at, making banking more efficient and getting those transactions settled a lot faster. So they're going to start experimenting with something called a central bank digital currency, which they're now naming FedNow. And this hasn't started yet, but they're going to be starting the experiment soon. They're going to run into opposition. The idea that the Fed will be creating a digital currency to make banking go more quickly is a lot of people thinking ahead that eventually the central bank would eliminate all other banks that would be able to record every single financial transaction that takes place. So they'd be able to record everything that takes place. Deacon Frank Riley joins me today, founder of Riley Financial Advisors, now part of Creative Planning. I hope you'll check them out. Great organization. creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus. That's the website for you. You know, creativeplanning.com/Creative Focus. He's a deacon also in the Diocese of San Diego, and I'm always grateful for his insight and for his time. Deacon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's an honor to be on the show.
I always enjoy talking to you and tapping into your expertise. For a lot of listeners, digital currency is probably still just a huge mystery. Where are we? Can you maybe explain it? Are we heading in that direction? How does it work? Are there concerns? Are there benefits? So I'll throw you that softball.
So there's a lot of confusion in terms of what is going on right now. So what is about to happen in July with FedNow is actually only about the settlement of transactions between banks. It's not actually a separate currency. FedCoin, which would be a digital currency issued by the federal government, is something they're talking about adding into FedNow to be able to settle those transactions. So for me, I think it's a great thing. FedNow particularly, yeah. FedNow to speed up our transactions and make them less expensive.
Yeah.
So instead of doing a transaction that takes anywhere from 1 or 2 or sometimes 7 days to actually see the money in your bank account,
yeah,
with FedNow, you'd see it the exact same day. So it would speed up the transaction and it'll make them cheaper. For every side of a transaction, there's somebody that's paying, right? So we swipe our credit card, and that's free to us. But it's not free to the vendor that's using the credit card. Well, if we could make it so that it is free or near free to both people on both sides and have it happen instantaneously, I think that's a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, no kidding. So how would FedNow differ from other cryptocurrencies that are out there? You're not a fan of Bitcoin, are you? If I remember correctly, you're not, right?
Well, my problem with Bitcoin and with all cryptocurrencies is that they're calling them currencies. And they are not currencies. They're assets, absolutely. And if they had called them a crypto asset, I think it would have been a lot better. A currency is something that is issued by a government to be used for trade. That is the legal definition of a currency if you go onto Investopedia or any dictionary. And Bitcoin is not issued by any government. So it's not a currency. If you understand Bitcoin as an asset, more like gold, mm-hmm, that's a much better way to think about it and to look at it, because you really can't walk into 7-Eleven and buy anything with Bitcoin, but you can walk into 7-Eleven and use a currency. So the reason I'm not a fan of Bitcoin or anything else is because of the fact that they've mislabeled it. The other reason I'm not a fan of Bitcoin as an investment for anybody is the volatility to it, right? In the last 12 months alone, Bitcoin has been as high as 41,000, as low as 16,000.
Wow.
And right now it's at 30,000. That's not a kind of investment that people generally want. It's I would call it a high risk investment. And if you're talking about a small part of your portfolio, then great, as long as you understand it to be an asset and to be a highly volatile asset, you can then maybe use it. So that's really why I don't like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. They're mislabeled and they're way too volatile to be a major part of anybody's portfolio. But the idea behind Bitcoin, the blockchain, is really very powerful. And it's something that we will start to use more and more for transactions and settlements of a lot of different types of assets. Wow. I think it'll be a fabulous thing when the stock exchange starts using blockchain to clear transactions.
You see that coming? What about the power that needs to drive that? You know, the energy, the computers, all that. Is that an issue or not so much? So I know we need that for mining crypto, but I guess you won't need that to operate this on a global scale.
Correct, because you're not doing that that mining. You have to have the computer power to register all of the blockchain transactions. But that's far different than the mining.
So,
and anything that can blockchain actually gives in some ways greater safety, and even in some cases privacy to a transaction than other ways that we're doing it right now.
True. So, what does it mean for the banking industry though in the future? If this becomes a reality, what happens?
So you're looking at kind of short term and long term. So again, Fed now. That they're launching in July is not a currency. It is simply a way to settle trades between banks. So the banks will like it because it will speed up the transactions. And as that flows to the consumer, we will like it because we'll be able to make payments quicker. But more than anything, for the small business to receive the payments quicker, right? That small business that's waiting for a payment of $10,000 or $15,000, in some cases on small business, could make the difference of making payroll or not. And if you get paid that and it's in your bank, you know, 2 minutes later, that you can easily make payroll with. So that idea of Fed now is really important for speeding up the transactions. Yeah. The Fed coin that will come after that is a way to also speed up the transactions. I think FedNow and FedCoin will end up being an asset for banks and not a competitor to banks.
Yeah. Let's do this. We'll take a few phone calls. I only have the Deacon for a short time today. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Kevin is in Los Angeles. Kevin, thanks for joining the conversation. Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you for having me. I was curious. The guest mentioned that Bitcoin was not a currency because it wasn't issued by the government, and the technical definition of currency is that. But our own currency isn't issued by our government. It's issued by the Federal Reserve, and most people are confused by the federal name, but the Federal Reserve is not a governmental organization of any kind. It's a conglomeration of central banks. So our Federal Reserve notes are redeemable to those banks. We really don't even own those. We have possession of them, but I'd like the guest to comment on that distinction. And that's my concern about all this FedNow and FedCoin is these are banks that run this, and they are not the government. And you know, banks are for-profit institutions. So whether or not they actually have you know, the people, the citizens, the consumers' interests at heart, I think is a huge question mark and would make me very reluctant to embrace anything of this sort.
Great call. Thanks, Kevin. Deacon, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, it is a very good question, Kevin, and it is really getting into the thicket of definitions and how our currencies come about. True, it is the Federal Reserve that prints the money that we use, but it's all authorized and backed by the U.S. government. So that's what makes it a currency issued by a government. And I would agree with you. Do the banks really have the consumer's best interest on the top of their thought process? Probably not. It is probably about profits for the bank, I would say. But as any business wants to capture clients, you have to have some concern
about what's good for the consumer. So the consumer is in the thoughts of the banks, just sometimes may not be the very top or first thing that they're thinking about. But if you say FedNow and FedCoin and even the U.S. currency isn't something that you really want to use, what follows up on that is, well, what would you use in exchange for that? And that's a great point that is maybe even be another whole show on that idea of could the U.S. dollar ever not be a reserve currency for the world.
Well, in fact, maybe
that
we can
also is a complex.
Deacon, let me take a short pause here. I'd love to follow up on that. I've been seeing a lot of stories right now about BRIC, liberating themselves from the U.S. dollar. If that happens, this country is going to be in a lot of trouble. Whether or not that will become a reality or not, I know China and Russia are leading the push right now to replace the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. How likely is that? How far off is it? And what would it mean to you? I mean, how difficult would that be? We'll look at that when I return. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, we'll certainly pray coming up in a moment. Can't wait to do that. Let's pray for our country. Let's pray for you, for the storm that you are in, for the difficulty you are facing, and we'll just implore God's mercy. It's my favorite time of the day. Of all the 3 hours I get to spend with you, that's the highlight. If you're just joining me, Deacon Frank Riley joins me. He's the founder of Riley Financial Advisors. Their website, too, I'm going to be clear on this so you can check them out, creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus. And I just heard in my headset here and over the national broadcast here that they're sponsors right now. So I want to extend my gratitude to Creative Planning, too. They do great work, so please check them out. When I was going to break, I mentioned I've been seeing a lot recently about China and Russia leading a push right now to replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And the question that I'd love to dive into, too, and I'll grab your calls. If you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. And you can get in right now, 888-914-9149. That's the direct line into the conversation. Is the world challenging the U.S. dollar's dominance? And if that happens, what does that mean for our future? You know, over the past decade, I would argue there's been several nations worldwide, led primarily by Russia and China, they've ramped up efforts to kick their dependence on the chief international reserve currency. And from diminishing the prevalence of the non-dollar transactions, reducing dollars in foreign exchange reserves, there's this effort to erode the use of the dollar in worldwide trade. The former chief economist for Goldman Sachs is a guy named Jim O'Neill, and he suggested that BRICS, that's a combination of countries, it's an acronym, it stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, right? And they want to expand that. They want even more nations to join, but just think of the population of China and India, right? You got Russia, Brazil, well, I'll do the BRIC. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. If that bloc expands its presence and enhances the alliance, their work, they want to threaten the greenback in global markets. What does it mean for us in the future? How realistic is it? It gives me pause when I hear about it. What about Saudi Arabia thinking about possibly not using the U.S. dollar? Deacon Riley joins me right now. As I said, he is the founder of Riley Financial Advisors and part of Creative Planning. Deacon, I'd love your take on this. Walk me off the ledge. I mean, I can't tell you how many stories I have seen in this effort to undermine our U.S. dollar. How likely is it that BRIC nations will expand? And how likely is it other nations will say, okay, I'm a little concerned about the U.S. dollar right now, and go in another direction?
Almost zero is where I would put it. So first of all, think about Brazil, Russia, India, or China. Do you want any of your money being held by those four countries?
No.
No, you don't, right? Now, look at what's actually happening in the world right now in foreign currency trades. Believe it or not, it's an incredible number. Every day, there's $7.5 trillion exchanged in foreign currency. Do you know that the U.S. dollar makes up 88% of one side of all of those transactions? And that the Chinese currency only makes up 7%? And Russia is so small, they don't even give it a number. People want the reserve currency, the currency that they're going to be moving the money into or out of, to be something that is stable and is there. Both Brazil and Russia do not have free floating currencies. The government picks what that exchange rate is. And so there's no real market movement to what is happening. So nobody wants to have their money in this BRIC currency that Brazil and Russia could decide that it's good for their economy for it to be devalued by 5% in one day. And in one day, you just lost 5% of everything you have in that BRIC currency. It's not anything that anybody is ever going to be interested in. They love to talk about it because they don't like the dominance of the United States.
Right.
But they don't have the economic backing to ever do anything about it.
Yeah, you're right. Inflation and deflation can have devastating effects on an economy. Deflation is what caused the Great Depression. Inflation is, we are all feeling right now, is causing a lot of pain. And I just can't imagine, having a Chinese currency or some other currency in the hands of the CCP. I mean, they could use that, as you point out, also to cripple nations. You know, they'd use it in a way that they can create a lot of harm. Robert is in Paramount, California.
That's why nobody wants it.
Yeah, no,
that's the whole point.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with a communist nation like that. Robert in Paramount, California. You're on the air with Deacon Riley. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Drew. Hey, Deacon. Thanks for having me. So I just I've been following this for a while, and I know it's around the corner. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on we hear a lot of the pros, right, which are really mostly conveniences. It's not really something that I think we really need in relation to what the cons are. And my biggest concern, and maybe you can shed some light on this, is just the fact that, if we ever were to go all digital and go cashless, now, the powers that be have access to our finances and, possibly even lead to them being able to, control our finances at some point if we don't, maybe they want to, quote unquote, cancel us or, we didn't comply or do something. And so we don't have access to it. So a little bit scary. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
So privacy is a very good issue to talk about when you get to the point of Fed coin. Privacy for anybody in the United States is a huge issue. We like our privacy. We want to protect our privacy. We don't ever want to give up our privacy. But I would also ask you this question. Who really needs to hide their transactions, right? If all of my transactions were known by the federal government, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's why Bitcoin is so popular, is that nobody can see it. And so it's used actually by drug dealers. It's used by terrorists. It's used by people who are selling weapons illegally.
Well, Deacon, let me interrupt for a second here, just on this point. To Robert's point, maybe he's concerned. Let's say there comes to a time you choose not to get vaccinated. I'll just take the vaccine. Or you want to donate to a cause that the government thinks is wrong, or whatever it could be. I mean, who knows how crazy it gets in the future? Robert, is your point that you're concerned that the government may be able to target you because of how you want to use your money, or somehow not let you buy, sell, trade, or are you concerned
about
that? That's what your kind of point is. Good. So, Deacon, I don't know how that might be too conspiratorial. It may never, ever happen.
Yep.
But there are people who are concerned about maybe government overreach and somehow limiting, your freedom to exercise, your money the way you want to use it, other than criminality.
I would agree that is going a bit down the conspiracy theory ideas that the federal government would actually say, no, you can't spend your money on that. So first of all, if that were to ever happen, would the people of the United States accept that? Of course they would not. You know, it's one of those things. We want our freedom. You know, we need to have our freedom to do what we want. At that point, you would be talking about, you'd have to have a government that would never change hands. So you wouldn't have elections then. Because if you were to say, okay, I'm really worried that one party is going to come in and take this and do this to me, well, wouldn't the next party come in and reverse that? So the only way it could actually ever work is if we no longer had a two-party system and no longer had elections. And at that point, I wouldn't really be worried about whether or not the government's going to stop a financial transaction.
Right.
I'd worry about every other freedom that we care about as Americans.
Well said. Deegan, I only have less than a minute, so let me let you put a quick plug in. Let everybody know what creative planning is all about and how they can get connected.
Yeah, Creative Planning is a nationwide firm that has been helping people for decades with their investments. With this new Catholic focus, we're actually taking all of those services and putting a Catholic identity onto them in terms of estate planning, yep, investing, charitable giving, financial
awesome
planning. It's a way to take your Catholic faith and merge it into your financial life.
That's Deacon Frank Riley, founder of Creative Planning. I'll be right back. Stay with me.